found in the land of the living. The deep says, it's not in me. And the sea said, it's not with me. It cannot be purchased for gold, nor can silver be weighed out for its price. It cannot be valued in the gold of Ophir, and precious onyx or sapphire. Neither gold nor crystal can equal it, nor can it be exchanged for jewelry or fine gold. No mention shall be made of coral or quartz, for the price of wisdom is above rubies. The topaz of Ethiopia cannot equal it, nor can it be valued in pure gold. Then he goes on to say, wisdom is found only in God, and it's seen by the fixed laws of the created order and the meticulous way that he orchestrates the forces of nature. Next time we have a violent windstorm or a lot of rain, just remember, it's not just happenstance. Job goes into detail how God is behind all of this. Verse 20. From where then does wisdom come? And where is the place of understanding? It is hidden from the eyes of all living and concealed from the birds of the air. Destruction and death say, we have heard a report about it with our ears. God understands its way, and he knows its place. He goes on to say, the winds appear to be random, but the force of each gust is determined by the Lord. Verse 24, for he looks to the ends of the earth, to see under the whole heaven, to establish a weight for the wind. And then he says, the exact amount of rain that falls is determined by the Lord. Verse 25, and he metes out the waters by measure. Rainstorms and lightning strikes are all determined by God. Verse 26, when he made a law for the rain and path for the thunderbolt. Then he saw wisdom and declared it. He prepared it. Indeed, he searched it out. God has spoken to man and showed him how to demonstrate true wisdom and understanding. Verse 28, behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. And to depart from evil is understanding. Now, Job begins now to long for the glories of the past. And we all know what that's like when you go through hardship. You say, oh, I remember when things were quiet and tranquil and peaceful. Look at the first part of verse 2. Oh, that I were as months past. Following this interlude, Job is brought back to his misery and begins to long for the glories of bygone days. Here we get a picture of some of what Job's life was like before he was delivered over to Satan. The fellowship that he had with God and the blessings that came from God. Chapter 29. Job further continued his discourse and said, oh, that I were as months past, as in days when God watched over me, when his lamp shone upon my head, and when by his light I walked through darkness. Just as I was in the days of my prime, when the friendly counsel of God was over my tent. There was a time when God watched over me. He protected me. He made clear the paths that I should take. The Word was a bright light, shining in places that were dark to me. When I was in the prime of my life, His counsel was fresh. When He was near to me, my children were all around me. He blessed me with peace and abundance. Verse 5. When the Almighty was yet with me, when my children were around me, when my steps were bathed with cream, and the rock poured out rivers of oil for me. So he says he remembers the fellowship that he had with God and the blessings that came from God. And then the honor accorded him by others because he cared for those in need. One of the great evidences of Job's godly life was the genuine esteem in which he was held by every level of society in which he lived. Look at verses 7 through 11. When I went out to the gate by the city, when I took my seat in the open square, the young men saw me and hid, and the aged arose and stood. The princes refrained from talking and put their hand on their mouth. The voice of nobles was hushed, and their tongue stuck to the roof of their mouth. When the ear heard, then it blessed me. And when the eye saw, then it approved me. And it had nothing to do with his wealth. people didn't cater to him because of his prosperity. He goes on to show that they honored him because of his godly life, a godly life that reached out and ministered to others in need, verse 12. Because I delivered the poor who cried out. Here's the reason all of these people held me in great esteem. Because I delivered the poor who cried out. And the fatherless and he who had no helper. The blessings of a perishing man came upon me, and I caused the widow's heart to sing for joy. I put on righteousness, and it clothed me. My justice was like a robe and a turban. I was eyes to the blind, and I was feet to the lame. I was a father to the poor, and I searched out the case that I did not know. In other words, when there were situations I didn't know the facts, I searched it out and tried to help those people. I broke the fangs of the wicked and plucked the victim from its teeth. And then the youthful aspirations that he once had in relationships to his believing he would live a long life. Verse 18, then I said, I shall die in my nest and multiply my days in the sand. My root is spread out to the waters, and the dew lies all night on my branch. My glory is fresh within me, and my bow is renewed in my hand. Because I sought to live a life of godliness, I assumed that the peace and prosperity that I enjoyed would continue. I would be fresh and green like the tree planted by the waters. I assumed that it would remain strong and healthy. Then he speaks of the respect that was accorded him because of his wise counsel in verses 21 through 25. Men listened to me and waited and kept silence for my counsel. After my words, they did not speak again, and my speech settled on them as dew. They waited for me as for the rain, and they opened their mouth wide as for the spring rain. If I mocked at them, they didn't believe it. In the light of my countenance, they did not cast down. I chose the way for them and set as a chief. So I dwelt as a king in the army, as one who comforts mourners. Oh, I long for those days once again. But then he begins to lament the agonies of the present. Look at the part of verse 1, chapter 30. But now. That's the way it used to be. But now. Beginning of verse 9. And now. Verse 16. And now. This was the way it was when I long for those days again. But now everything has changed. There has been a reversal of all those good things. And he speaks of the indignities he was made to endure from social misfits and outcasts. Remember, he was held in high esteem by the upper echelons of his whole society. Now he's looked upon and ridiculed and even attacked by the social misfits and outcasts. Job experienced the change of being held in honor by the most honorable in society to being held in contempt by the most contemptible in his society. Chapter 30 in verses 1 through 8. But now they mock at me, men younger than I, whose fathers I disdain to put with the dogs of my flock. Indeed, what profit is the strength of their hands to me? Their vigor has perished. They are gaunt from want and famine, fleeing laid into the wilderness, desolate and waste, who pluck marrow from the bushes and broom trees for their food. They were driven out from among men. They shout at them as a thief. They had to live in clefts and in the valleys and caves of the earth and the rocks. Among the bushes they brayed. Under the metals they settled. They were sons of fools. Yes, sons of vile men. They were scourged from the land. Not only have I become a social outcast, but I've been made to suffer gross indignities from the very dregs of my society. Young men whose father were so vile, I wouldn't even let them take care of the dogs that watched over my flock. They're thugs and gangsters and have to live in caves and dens of the earth. They not only made fun of me and deride me, but they're out to hurt me. They are totally out of control and determined to harm me, verse 9. And now, I am their taunt song. Yes, I am their byword. They abhor me. They keep far from me. Do not hesitate to spit in my face. because he, speaking of God, has loosed my bowstring and afflicted me. They have cast off restraint before me. At my right hand the rabble rises. They push away my feet. They rise against me, their ways of destruction. They break up my path and promote my calamity. They have no help. They come, and then he goes on to describe them. I like the surf of the ocean driven by the wind, destroying everything in its path. When once I lived in peace, now I'm in abject fear and terror. Everything that I once had was taken from me. Verse 14, they come as broad breakers. Under the ruinous storm, they roll along. Terrors are turned upon me. They pursue my honor as the wind, and my prosperity has passed like a cloud. And then he speaks of the agony of being forsaken and abandoned in his hour of need, verse 24. And now my soul is poured out because of my plight. The days of affliction take hold of me, and my bones are pierced at night, and my gnawing pains take no rest. By great force my garment is disfigured. It binds me about as the collar of my coat. And he has cast me into the mire, and I've come like dust and ashes. Now he speaks directly to the Lord. I cry out to you, but you do not answer. I stand up and you regard me, but you have become cruel to me. With the strength of your hand you oppose me. You lift me up to the wind and cause me to ride on it. You spoil my success, for I know that you will bring me to death and to the house appointed for the living. And then he begins to lament how he reached out to others, but in his time of trouble they did not reach out to him. Surely he would not stretch out his hand against a heap of ruins. If they cry out when he destroys it, have I not wept for him who was in trouble? Has not my soul grieved for the poor? But when I looked for good, evil came to me. And when I waited for light, then came darkness. My heart is in turmoil and cannot rest. I go about mourning, but not in the sun. I stand up in the congregation and cry out for help. I'm a brother of jackals and a companion of ostriches. My skin grows black and falls from me. My bones burn with fever. My harp is turned in the morning, and my flute to the voice of those who weep. And in this latter part of Job's final defense of himself, he confirms God's evaluation of his godly character. Some commentators claim that this part of Job's discourse reveals that he had fallen into sinful self-righteousness. But I believe that's to miss the point. God twice declared that Job was a blameless and upright man, one who feared God and shunned evil, and further stated that there was none like him on the earth. Now that was God's evaluation of Job. He even knew what was in Job's heart. And yet he was able to say those things about Job. And in this chapter, Job confirms God's evaluation of his godly character. He does so by dealing with a whole range of sins. Sins of conduct, but also hidden sins of the heart. Sins of attitude, sins of the mind. Sins that only the sinner and God would know about. And he does this in two ways. I have that in your outline. First of all, from verses 1 through 4, by his resolve not to allow his eyes to ever be used as an instrument of sin. And secondly, by his, if I am guilty, then let me be judged, defense of himself. He goes on to speak of various sins and says, if I did such and such, then let God do it. And by implication, he's saying, I never did these things. First of all, he confirms God's evaluation of his godly character by his resolve not to allow his eyes to be used as instruments of sin. Look at chapter 31, verse 1. I have made a covenant with my eyes. Why then shall I look upon a young woman? Job was very much aware that a man is stirred by a woman who is handsome in face and in form. He knew how easy it was to go from just admiring her beauty to looking at her with lustful thoughts. In order to demonstrate to his friends and to us that what God said about him was true, Job tells us that he about an agreement he made with his eyes. When I see a young, beautiful woman, I have purposed in my heart never to allow my eyes to look upon her in a lustful way. Now, even though women are different in that they are not stirred by the same things as a man is, they are susceptible to the variation of the sin. I asked Jan one time, well, now you're a woman. Are you stirred by the way a man looks, whether he's handsome and built nice? Well, no, we look for other things. I said, well, what about Potiphar's wife? It says that Joseph, the Holy Spirit went on to tell us, that Joseph was handsome in face and in form. He's a handsome man and well built. And Potiphar's wife looked to cast longing eyes upon her and him. What about her? And her response, well, that's her problem. You see, that's the kind of logic. I can't deal with that. I have no answer to her logic. But obviously, the men and women, and maybe not in the same way, have a problem with things that come to the eye gate. And Job is speaking specifically because he's speaking to other men. And this is probably the most difficult for any man. When I look at a beautiful woman, I'm going to look at her beauty. But when my mind starts to think beyond just the fact that she's beautiful, I'm going to shut it off. I've made a promise that I will never allow my eyes to look that way at a woman. Now that's a pretty hard covenant to keep, especially in this day and age. In Job's day, a woman was covered from head to foot. But when you get down to places like Ocean City, Maryland, you see women aren't hardly covered at all. And it's a lot more difficult. And the question we need to ask is, have we ever, and this is what Jesus means when he says, if your eye causes you sin, pluck it out. In other words, take every radical step necessary to be sure you do not allow your members to be used as instruments of unrighteousness. But Job said that he had purpose in his heart never to allow this to happen. Just in dealing with a sin which the apostle called the lust of the eye, Job confirms God's evaluation of his righteousness. And in doing so, he also shows how short we come in seeking to emulate the righteousness that was in Job. In order to help us to become more like Job, we need to have Job's fear of God when it comes to those hidden sins of the heart. That was the secret that lay behind Job's ability to control his eyes and his mind. It was the fear of God that prompted Job to have radical dealings with the sinful use of his eyes. Look at the text. I have made a covenant with my eyes. Why then shall I look upon a young woman? For, here's the reason, for what is the allotment of God from above and the inheritance of the Almighty from on high? Is it not disaster for the wicked and destruction for the wicked and disaster for the works of iniquity? Does he not see my ways? No one else may know what's going through my mind when I look at that young woman, but God does. God does. And Job said, as a result of that, I've made this promise that by the grace of God, I'll never look on a woman that way. Now, the second way he confirms God's evaluation of his godly character is by what I have called by his, if I am guilty, then let me be judged defense of myself. And I'm saying that because all through the rest of this chapter, at least through most of it, yes, through the whole chapter, he sets forth the if clause. Verse 5, if I have walked. Verse 9, if my heart, if I have, if I have, if I have. Let's look at those. And in these if clauses in our text, Job is not leaving open the possibility that he was guilty of those sins. They are set forth as outright denials of engaging in his sins. He does so. In doing so, he covers a wide range of sins that we all struggle with from time to time. Sins of conduct, sins of conscience. And as we consider each of these if clauses in the text of this chapter, let's ask ourselves if we would be willing to put ourselves on the line in relationship to these sins as Job was. In other words, am I guilty of lying or deceiving others in a way in my job or in my business? Verse 5 and 6. Or 5 through 8. If I have walked with falsehood, or if my foot has hastened to deceit, let me be weighed in a just balance, that God may know my integrity. If my step is turned from the way, or my heart walked after my eyes, or if any spot adheres to my hands, then let me sow and another eat. Yes, let my harvest be rooted out. And this is where we need to ask ourselves, how about as we work for our employer, do we rob him of the time? Do we cut corners in our business? Do we make promises that we don't keep? Do we fudge the facts on our income tax return? Do we work for somebody and take money under the table they don't have to pay taxes on? See, Job said, I didn't engage in any of those things. Then he says, have I been sinfully enticed by another woman, or do I look for subtle ways to become involved with them? Verse 9. If my heart has been enticed by a woman, or if I lurked at my neighbor's door, then let my wife grind for another, and let others bow down over her. For that would be wickedness. Yes, it would be iniquity worthy of judgment, for that would be a fire that consumes to destruction and would root out all my increase. Do I ignore the legitimate complaints of my employees? Verse 15. If I have despised the cause of my manservant or maidservant when they complained against me, what then shall I do when God rises up? When he punishes me, how shall I answer him? Did not he who made me in the womb make them? Did not the same one fashion us in the womb? Then he goes on to say, did I have an inordinate love for money? Think myself better than others because of my wealth? Or turn to any form of idolatry? Verse 24. Excuse me, I didn't go on and read down through verse 23. If I have kept the poor from their desire, or caused the eyes of the widow to fail, or eat my morsel by myself, so that the fatherless may not eat of it, from my youth I reared him as my father, and from my mother's womb I guarded the widow. If I have seen anyone perish for lack of clothing, or any poor man without covering, if his heart has not blessed me, and if he was not warm with the fleece of my sheep, if I have raised my hands against the fatherless when I saw and had I helped him in the gate, then let my arm fall from my shoulder. Let my arm be torn from the socket, for destruction from God is a terror to me. Do I have an inordinate love for money, thinking myself better than others because of my wealth, or did I turn to any form of idolatry? Verse 24. If I have made gold my hope, or said to find gold, you are my conscience. If I have rejoiced because of wealth, and my wealth was great, and because my hand had gained much. If I observe the sun when it shines, or the moon moving in its brightness, so that my heart has been secretly enticed, and my mouth has kissed my hand, this also would be iniquity worthy of judgment, for I would have denied God who is above. Now at this point, there are several if clauses without a corresponding penalty. It's very difficult to see where one leaves off and the other begins. But what follows is very important because it deals with various sins that may be hidden from others, of which are most difficult to avoid. And he says, do I have a vindictive attitude toward my enemies and hope to play a role in bringing their downfall? Verse 29, if I have rejoiced at the destruction of him who hated me, or lifted myself up when evil found me, indeed I have not allowed my mouth to sin by asking for a curse on his soul. Are those sins that I'm covering up because of the fear of being caught? Verse 33. If I have covered my transgression as Adam, and hid by hiding my iniquity in my bosom, because I feared the great multitude and dreaded the contempt of family, so that I kept silent and did not go out of the door. Or that I had one to hear me, here is my mark. Oh, that the Almighty would answer me. And here again he pleads for an audience with God. Oh, that I had one to hear me. Here is my mark. Oh, that the Almighty would answer me, that my prosecutor had written a book. Surely I would carry it on my shoulders and bind it on him like a crown. I would declare to him the number of my steps. Like a prince, I would approach him. Remember, it's been months Job has been suffering, and he has not heard one time from God. He has been crying out to the Lord for months, and yet there was no answer. If only someone would give me an audience. If the Almighty would answer my questions. If only a prosecutor would tell me the charges against me, I wouldn't hide them. I'd wear them like a badge of honor. I am so certain that I would be vindicated, that I would boldly march in before the judge. Now Job continues his evaluation of his godly character. He says, do I have regard for the biblical laws which deal with the environment? Job was even understanding certain rules and laws of God that govern the environment. And he even was concerned about them. Verse 38, if my land cries out against me, and its furrows weep together, if I have eaten its fruit without money, or caused its owners to lose their lives, then let thistles grow instead of wheat, and weeds instead of barley. Job was a man who demonstrated practical godliness in broad measure. And when I was done going over this, I said, may we all have the same zeal in the pursuit of that kind of practical holiness. But that takes the grace of God. But the grace of God is available to us all. And as we were dealing with in Sunday school, may we go back into the Scriptures and remember what sin is? It's been so confused in our day and age, and that our society has turned everything upside down, that many believers have lost sight of what sin is. As a result, we can sin with an open hand. We can make promises that we never, ever intend to keep. We can deal with business deals that are shady. We want to hide a little money so the IRS doesn't get it. And do that with a clear conscience. We need to go back and say, oh God, help me to seek by your grace to live such a godly life that when I stand before you, you'll show me my faults. But you'll also be able to say, well done, good and faithful servant. Let's bow in prayer.